The RSPCA is using a veterinary conference underway in Brisbane to urge vets to play their part in identifying animal hoarders or people at risk of animal hoarding. And I'm joined now by Dr. Mandy Patterson, who is from the RSPCA Queensland. Good afternoon, Mandy.
Hi.
Yeah, how common is this problem of animal hoarding?
Well, we don't actually know. People who hoard animals tend to be quite secretive and reclusive. And so our record keeping or our ability to know the exact numbers is difficult. So we actually suspect there's a lot more people out there that would fall under this banner than we actually know about.
Right, because vets generally focus on the animal necessarily, but what you're really saying here is that vets should also look at the owner as well and try to take a holistic approach. What are the kind of warning signs for vets that this is a problem?
Well, yeah, vets, of course, do look at the animal, but an animal does come attached to a person. So the sort of warning signs are that if somebody comes in and every time they come in, they bring a different animal, and they over a period of time, they might bring in quite a few animals, but they never bring in the same animal twice. That's a red flag. Another one is the animal actually presents with conditions that are preventable if the animal was receiving normal sort of care. Like it might be very, very skinny, it might have fleas, it might have other sorts of skin conditions, it might have muscle atrophy, it might have very badly matted hair, things like that, that really normal care would prevent from happening, but these animals have that. There's a whole range of other sorts of conditions that can sometimes, people who, they seem overly attached to their animal. I mean, I know we all love our animals, but it's sort of like overly attached, and they want heroic efforts with animals, even when the animal really should be humanely put down. They find it impossible to allow any of their animals to be put down.
Yes, and in your practice, how often do you see it?
Well, I'm not in practice.
Oh, okay, you're in RSPCA indeed.
Yeah, I'm actually, well, I have been in practice, and I did see a couple in the years I was in practice, but no, I work for the RSPCA now as their scientist, and but our inspectors do see, at least a dozen, if not more, of cases that are animal hoarding every year. We suspect that there are a lot that go undetected, because actually the biggest trouble that animal welfare organisations have, who have the right to look after the law in the particular state, is actually locating people who are hoarding. Usually the law gives the RSPCA or whatever animal agency has that power to do, to intervene, to help the people, to seize the animals if necessary. But in fact, we have to locate them before we can do anything.
It's a sensitive topic, isn't it? Because some people like to have a lot of pets, and they might have cats and dogs and horses and birds and the whole works, and they love them and they look after them, even though their house might be squalid and filthy. That's their choice. Where is the line? Where can people intervene like vets, but also the law. Where is that line?
Well, it really comes down to the welfare of the animals. As far as if you're looking at the animal welfare law, it comes to the welfare of the animal. I mean, yes, if somebody has a lot of animals, but they're looking after them adequately, then there isn't really an animal welfare issue, and they probably wouldn't come under animal hoarding. And when you say houses are squalid, I don't think you actually realise how squalid these houses are with true hoarding.
Give us an example.
Well, they often don't have running water or electricity because they haven't paid their bills. There's feces all over the floor. They haven't got a functioning kitchen. I mean, at the conference yesterday, I showed some footage of film taken by our inspectors when they go into properties like this. They're absolutely disgusting, and it's unbelievable that anyone could possibly be living in establishments that look like this. So, the line that you're talking about is when the care of the animal is not happening, and the people are actually deluded. They don't know that they're not caring for the animal. They don't recognize that the animal is suffering. And it's quite common to find dead animals in different stages of decomposition throughout the house. And the people don't actually realize the animals are dead. We are talking about a serious mental health issue.
So what happens in these interventions? That the vet identifies it and reports it to who?
Well, to whoever manages the Animal Welfare Act in that particular state, which is usually the RSPCA or the government. But it doesn't mean that that particular agency is necessarily going to sweep in there and seize all the animals, because in some situations, we can actually work with the people. We might be able to get them to surrender some of the animals and help them look after the remaining animals better. We might dissect them for them. We might get the local vet involved so that they can start getting treatment, because we realize how attached they are to these animals and how traumatic it is for them to have the animals removed. But the bottom line for us is the welfare of the animals. And actually, the bad welfare cannot be overstated. Sometimes the animals are suffering really badly.
Yeah, of course, the cost of these sorts of things is prohibitive. I mean, I just had my little dog, a little wart on his shoulder. It cost me like $1,000 to get taken off. I think I should have gone to myself and had a couple of procedures while I was there. So when you get to a situation where you've got an animal that has all these problems and the owner now faces is a big bill, is there any sort of support way of helping them with the cost?
Well, you really have to discuss that with the local vet. I mean, when somebody takes on an animal, they really need to be aware of the responsibilities that come with having that animal. And, I mean, as you did, you knew that there was going to be costs, and, you know, there's pet
not
insurance.
Not that much.
There's also, well, I can't comment on that, but I mean, we know that there is going to be a cost involved. Some people take out pet insurance. So, you know, people know at least there's going to be some responsibility at having a pet. So, I mean, we're not talking about situations like this. We're talking about really quite abnormal situations where the animals aren't even being fed enough in most cases.
Mm. Yeah. What's the most number of animals that you've struck or the RSPCA struck in one property?
Well, it depends on what species you're talking about. We've certainly gone to properties where they've had over 100 dogs on the one property, but we've also gone to places where they've had rats in cages, and there's been hundreds of rats.
Mm, rats. Oh, my goodness.
Well, you know, the white pet rats.
Yeah. People have rats for pets. Okay, very good. It's different strokes for different folks. Thank you very much for your time, Doctor.
That's a pleasure. Yeah,